This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. Recently, WikiLeaks released the secret negotiated draft text for the entire TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Intellectual Property Rights Chapter. The TPP is the largest ever economic treaty encompassing nations representing more than 40% of the world's GDP. WikiLeaks is sparking a public debate about the contents of this agreement that wasn't really possible when the agreement was secret from public opinion. The TPP is much more than a trade and tariffs agreement. It will give transnational corporations greater control over our food policies, internet access, medicines and healthcare, the environment, regulation of banks and labor standards.
The TPP provides for trade tribunals, permitting corporations to sue governments for the loss of expected future profits if a country passes an environmental or a health law that will cost the corporation money. Indeed, corporations will have inordinate power over virtually every aspect of our lives. Building Bridges entertains the discussion with Laurie Wallach, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, on the TTP that WikiLeaks intended.
Laurie, how are you?
Wonderful, thank you very much.
Good. Now, you're not as bad as Donna Lieberman from the NYCLU, who was actually interviewed last by us while she was riding her bicycle. So I just want to make sure I know you're on your cell phone, and I assume that you've pulled over to speak to us.
Unfortunately, I'm permanently pulled over. I'm in a traffic jam that has not moved for about 25 minutes.
We're going to have to take that up at the next issue. But, I don't want to take for granted that people really understand what the breadth and the substance of the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is. So why don't we begin in a very elementary way by laying out the parameters and the significance of this massive agreement?
So the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, is branded as a trade agreement, but really that is the least of it. It's an agreement that has 29 chapters, and only 5 of them really have anything to do with trade. The other 24 chapters, as you've described, set new corporate rights and set new constraints on government regulatory policy. Everything from rolling back some of the financial re-regulation to making us accept imported food that doesn't meet our safety standards, to banning exports of liquid natural gas, to even meddling, for instance, in New York's local state expenditures of tax dollars, the farm-to-school lunch program. Can you give preference to local procurement, which is good for the climate, good for farmers, good for our nutrition, and also good for jobs? All this meddling into non-trade issues is enforced through the governing provision of the agreement, and that is each country shall ensure the conformity of all domestic laws, regulations, and administrative procedures with the attached chapters. It basically is a way to quietly impose a system of enforceable, hard to change, corporate-led and corporate-benefiting governance. It's enforceable through both trade sanctions and through corporations, as you mentioned, suing governments and getting paid cash damages. And if this were to go into place, not a single comma can be changed unless all the countries agree. So we have a huge change in public opinion. We have changes in elections. With this, we're super glued into these retrograde policies again, most of which have nothing to do with trade. It's a really elegant corporate Trojan horse mechanism.
Now, as you said, this is a massive agreement that is proposed. But one of the sections we do have more information on than others, and thanks to WikiLeaks. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the agreement that the chapter that was recently posted by WikiLeaks.
Absolutely. So just to put this in perspective, imagine if huge swaths of U.S. federal and state law were going to be rewritten. And somehow your members of Congress and you And the press couldn't see the text, but 600 corporate representatives could. That's actually what's going on. There's 600 official trade advisors, and the public and press have been locked out. So what happened last Wednesday is a text of the intellectual property chapter went up in WikiLeaks, and this is what we found out when we saw that. Number one, shamefully, the United States is pushing most of the retrograde corporate proposals, and they're largely being opposed by almost all the other countries. There are 12 countries in TPP, from Australia and New Zealand to Singapore and Malaysia, Vietnam, Chile, Peru, Mexico, Canada, etc. Most of the other countries have pushed back, and here's what is in there. For patents, there are extensions on medicine patents that would make it harder for drugs to go to generics. This would increase prices, and the developing country partners in the negotiations, it would literally be a death sentence for people with HIV/AIDS, people with malaria, tuberculosis who couldn't get generics. In the U.S., these sort of patent evergreening terms would mean higher prices here for things like cancer medications. It would jack up, it basically contradicts the goals of Obamacare. It would jack up medicine prices. On the chapter on copyrights, we see a lot of the aspects of SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act. Folks can remember that from last year. Amazing fight back, shut down SOPA in Congress. It was the big content, Disney and all those guys, trying to make sure that every time you clicked in your mouse, you had to pay. And a bunch of the things that Congress and the public said, no way, to in the U.S., in public, in open, is through the back door in the copyright chapter. So these are things like criminalizing small-scale copyright violations, or things like saying mandatory fines on any user for inadvertent copyright violations, things like breaking a digital lock when you've bought legally a piece of software, but you want to run it in Linux. You're going to break the digital lock. And then finally, there are a variety of provisions where what the U.S. is proposing for the corporations goes against what U.S. law is. So, for instance, on the copyright issue right now, your ISPs, your Internet Service Providers, have a waiver from liability unless they had a reason to know that you were copyright violating. They don't have to, they're not liable, so they're not going to shut you down. That was part of what was in SOPA. But that provision, even though it's not in U.S. law, and in fact Congress said no, is the U.S. position totally isolated in the TPP text. And same thing on the patent issue. The U.S. is pushing to start patenting things like surgical procedures, life forms, not in U.S. law. Has been a very controversial set of issues. It's a backdoor way to do for big pharma and big content, but can't survive in the sunshine of public discourse, even in this Congress.
Well, we're certainly not starting with a fresh slate, and I can't think of anybody better to place this fast-track process of the TPP in context. So let's go back and really also, just in case people have any doubts about how destructive and how this really furthers the growth of a plutocracy, what these trade agreements have actually meant. And this may be the most pernicious, and it's certainly the largest of all of them. But help us contextualize and give some breath to what the predecessors, this is certainly the prodigy of the NAFTAs and so on, what the heck have they done? What's the problem?
That is a really good question. So here's the thing everyone needs to think about. Before NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico, Canada, U.S., before the World Trade Organization, trade agreements were about trade. They cut border taxes, tariffs, and they lifted quotas, which were limits on how much stuff you could import. With NAFTA, with WTO, a whole new generation of these corporate coup d'etat instruments, mainly not having to do a lot with trade, but promoting offshoring of jobs. So TPP, like NAFTA, has the actual special privileges and protections if you leave. Having all these constraints on health and safety, all these new corporate rights at the patent extensions. Now, I have heard TPP called NAFTA on steroids. And from the chapters that have leaked that I've been able to review as a recovering trade attorney, I think that is an ample and accurate description. So what has happened then? If this is NAFTA on steroids, what happened with NAFTA? What happened with WTO? Well, I'm afraid in New York, you all know it only too well, 40% of your manufacturing jobs in the entire state of New York are gone in the 18 years of WTO, 19 years of NAFTA, over 5 million total U.S. manufacturing jobs gone. That was one out of three of all of our manufacturing jobs in the U.S. in 20 years, in less than 20 years. And real wages, the median in real terms, of course, has remained flat even as worker productivity has increased. So even if your job didn't get outsourced, the way that trade affects you is all those folks who lost their higher wage union factory jobs. And by the way, a lot of it was high-end. In New York, it was medical diagnostic equipment. It was a lot of the sort of high-tech machinery that goes into computers, that goes into very high-tech equipment, precision tools. This was not just stamping out some piece of plastic. This was very skillful, high-wage work. That then means there's a surplus of workers who don't have jobs who then try and compete for the service jobs that can't be outsourced. Real wages in those service sectors are growing, have gone down. And, of course, very specific terms in NAFTA and in WTO promote things like banning the use of Buy America procurement, where our tax dollars get sewn back into our economy, making us import certain kinds of foods that don't meet our safety standards. Now, TPP takes all of what went wrong, doesn't fix any of what we have learned, did not work, expands on it, and then adds a bunch of additional dangerous chapters. Like there's a chapter in there written just for Big Pharma that could actually undermine the provisions that set up in Obamacare, those medicine formularies that would help us get lower bargaining prices for Medicare and Medicaid. It would actually create an obligation for every signatory country to set up a right for Big Pharma to challenge the decisions of those doctors and pharmacologists who are supposed to be independently running those boards for medical purposes, not for profit. It also has a chapter, not in the previous agreements, that would roll back chunks of the financial re-regulation that the whole world decided was necessary to avoid another major crisis. And you might think, as you're listening to this, how the heck could something like that get through Congress? And that gets to what you mentioned, which is fast track.
Well, so I guess that we have to pursue what fast track is and where it is in Congress right now. I know there's a lot of discussion right now. I know there's a letter by over 151 Democrats in the House and the number of Republicans. What is fast track and what's going on right now with it?
So fast track is a Nixon-era legacy, very arcane procedure that delegates away Congress's constitutional authority over trade. So the history of our country is we actually got hatched out of a trade war, the Boston Tea Party. Good old King George decided to unilaterally raise tariffs on tea and other stuff. And so when the founders wrote the Constitution, they made darn sure that they put decisions over trade in the most diffuse body, the Congress. Congress has exclusive authority over the substance of trade. The executive branch negotiates agreements. It's one of the most intentional checks and balances in the Constitution. Nixon, funny thing, didn't like that. He wanted to grab some of Congress's power. So he wrote this procedure that delegates away five separate congressional procedures and powers in one lump sum. The bottom line, if fast track authority is in effect, U.S. negotiators can sign the TPP before Congress votes, enter into that agreement, having set the terms unilaterally, write legislation to implement it, changing our laws. That legislation doesn't even go through committees in Congress, goes right to the floor. There is a guaranteed vote in 60 days, no amendments allowed, limited debate, including in the Senate, so it can't be filibustered. 30 more days in the Senate, done. Yes or no vote on what will be thousands of pages of rewrites of U.S. law. It's like some horrible legislative luge run. And as Jim Hightower called it, he called it a legislative laxative that's bad for the U.S. Constitution. It basically just snags all of Congress's authority and lets a bad trade agreement get railroaded through. Now, here's the good news. That can only happen if Congress agrees in advance to hand over its authority. And that's where all of us can get involved. Because, as you mentioned, 151 members of the House of Representatives, Democrats, almost every New York Democrat, handful of not on there, almost every New York Democrat on a letter saying they're not going to give a blank check like that anymore. Maybe that was okay in 74 when Nixon cooked it up and these agreements were mainly about tariffs. But Congress isn't going to give away all their authority to legislate, because that's what this is. It's diplomatic backdoor legislating. So Congress has laid down a marker saying no more of this. President Obama, when he was a candidate, promised he'd replace it. Heartbreakingly, now he's asking for this Nixon-era power grab. All of us, by making sure Congress just maintains its authority, they don't have to say no to anything, they just don't have to give away something. So all of us working together can make sure that a majority in Congress says, all right, you want a trans-Pacific deal? That kind of deal has to have certain criteria. We've told you what those were. You're ignoring them because it's not like members of Congress haven't been on this case for years. You're ignoring them. You're not going to do an agreement like that. We're not going to give you a right to railroad it through Congress. You either do it right and it can face the scrutiny of the public through open debate, release the text. Congress will review it. Congress will vote on it under normal procedures. If it can pass, then you got a good agreement. If it can't pass, you're going to have to go back and renegotiate it. And so for all of us to get involved, I want to send folks to a website. It's called Expose the TPP, www.exposethetpp.org. That will give you all the information in bite sizes that I've been describing about TPP, but it also tells you how to get involved in the fast-track fight. And in New York, interestingly, a bunch of your Republican members of the House of Representatives have also come out against fast-track because from a Republican member's perspective, it's a sovereignty issue. They basically are very strict about the constitutional issues. The Democrats largely dislike TPP, and together they have a majority to actually require a real review and debate if we do our work.
Lori, let me ask you this. So, I mean, clearly Congress needs to reject the fast-track trade, promotion authority, as these documents show. You know, the Obama administration has been misleading the people and the Congress, really, while trying to bully other nations. But what I want to do is just parse out more specifically, and again, you are the person to do this. Certainly, we support transnational interests and want to see the growth and have to deal with the reality of trade negotiated in a different way. So you mentioned a little bit about that, but I wonder if you could flesh it out more. Transparency, et cetera, but what would we be looking for when we promote people like yourself to these positions of authority who are both democratic, have knowledge, and are really working in the interests of the working class? So lay it on us.
So the easiest thing to do, actually, is it's written down is the good news. A couple of years ago, a lot of progressive members of Congress, a lot of the folks who were fighting to make sure that fast track isn't given to the president, and a lot of unions and consumer and family farm and faith and environmental groups got together. And we said, okay, Democratic president, let's talk about what a good trade agreement would include, what things we'd never repeat that we've learned the worst of from NAFTA and WTO, and what process could actually get us there. And that got basically written down and put into legislation called the Trade Act, Trade Reform Accountability, Development, and Employment Act of 2009. It got reintroduced in the last Congress also. If you look for the Trade Act of 2009, it just happens to be the easiest version of it to find as compared to last Congress's. That year, it got 150 House co-sponsors, which is really exciting. So 150 House members said, I want a new way of doing it, the negotiations, and I want a new set of agreements. And the basic rules of it, more or less, would you cut back all the non-trade corporate special interest deals, the jacking up the patents and the medicine prices, the requiring us to import stuff that doesn't meet our safety standards, the undermining of financial regulation, and then you put in place the stuff that's missing. So there are global standards that all the countries have agreed to as sovereigns, you know, not imposing U.S. standards on the rest of the world. But what is the floor of decency that global commerce ought to be operating on? And that is the international standards of the International Labor Organization. Those are the basic core labor rights, the multilateral environmental agreements that set up a whole set of standards on toxics, clean air, water, the international human rights agreements, the World Health Organization's basic agreements on access to medicine and rights to health, if you take this existing body of international law that now has no enforcement, that now the trade agreements trump, and you made that the binding floor of decency on which our commerce would be conducted, we would bring up standards in the most poor and developing countries, and we would make sure that when the U.S., say, is competing with Vietnam, who's in TPP, it's on a basis where workers in Vietnam would, for the first time ever, have independent trade unions. They would have certain rights and guarantees that right now they're not having. Means, if you're a big multinational corporation, heck, you move from China to Vietnam because it's cheaper. There are absolutely no labor rights. And if you protest, you go to jail right away, versus in China, you might have a chance of not going to jail. So putting a floor of decency in, taking the corporate extras out, those would be good trade agreements. And the process to get them is laid out, really a replacement for Fast Track, also in the Trade Act. You can also go to our website, which is tradewatch.org, www.tradewatch.org. You'll also see that same action alert on how to write to your member of Congress about Fast Track. There's a lot more detail if you want to get down in the weeds on any of these issues on the TPP page. You can go to the Trade Act page, and you can look through all of the letters of support. Every faith denomination, Sierra Club, unions, the farm groups, everyone loves that alternative, and that is what I would be for.
Well, we're going to do that. Now we have the most important, most significant question. Has the traffic jam that swallowed you up loosened up at all?
You know, I've been so interested in our conversation, I pulled up on the grass so I wouldn't have to pay attention, hopped up the curb. Unless my tires are flat, I will now look around and see it does seem to be moving, but it's going to take me a while to get back in there. And I'm sitting here actually looking at a deer. There seems to be a deer in the woods right here.
Oh, wow.
And I've been talking to you with such pleasure and intensity, I actually didn't notice, but it does seem to be moving.
Well, you do talk to us with pleasure and intensity, and the pleasure is certainly ours, the delivery of the information with such passion and righteousness is so very appreciated. And Lori Wallach, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, has been researching and traveling and engaging activists on this issue for years. And make sure you go to those websites, and then the struggle commences or continues for a meaningful, democratic, transparent, with a floor of justice, really transnational trade policy. Thank you so much for joining us, and give a blink to the deer for us as well. I can see the critter in my mind right now.
Thank you very much for covering it. We can win.
Now we go to a recent demonstration where hundreds of people marched through downtown Minneapolis to protest the secret negotiations on the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Nothing about us without us. We're here because we know what's best for us. No corporation, no bank, no politician has any right to cut a deal behind closed doors that hurts us, that impacts our communities, our families, where we live, how we work. Nothing about us without us. Nothing about us without us.
We don't get to see what's in it until literally it's like a fast train going by. And as slow as Congress moves, not on this. No amendments, no discussion, up or down.
The people who want to see this through say, we need to do this in secret. Because, that's right. They say, we need to do this in secret because these other countries, they're not going to make their best offer unless we let our diplomats handle this behind closed doors. That's right. And if you, as Congress, or if we as the people, know what's in it, it's never going to get passed. They literally, their rationale is, we have to keep this secret because if we make it public, it will be so unpopular it will never get passed. Well, if it's that unpopular, it shouldn't get passed, am I right?
We do know there's no meaningful language in here on workers' rights at this moment. There's no meaningful language on the environment. So what does it mean? It means that the markets control, and the markets don't take into account, obviously, workers' rights, what we're paid, do we have a right to speak up, do we have a right to organize. They don't take into account environmental issues. Are we going to continue to destroy our planet? Are we going to continue to contribute massively to global warming so that, you know, at some point none of us will be left because except for these profits and the remnants of these corporations, really what we're talking about here is that, number one, we need to say no fast track, and number two, if they're going to be trade deals, they need to be for the people of this earth, including the people of this country, not just for the corporations.
I want to tell President Obama, and I want to tell his administration, and I want to tell the United States Trade Representative, Michael Froman, that when it comes to protecting American families, American jobs, and human rights around the world, there is no right America, there is no left America, there is no civil society America, and there sure as hell is no corporate America. It's the United States of America standing up for what we believe in.
Whether we come from immigrant rights movement or from the Greens or from labor or from democracy, because this is a key democracy issue, whether we're a broad-based organization like Take Action Minnesota or in one neighborhood in Minneapolis or St. Paul, we need to figure out that we have democracy and economic justice in common. And if we don't fight in common and work in common and talk to neighbors in common, we're just going to see another loss, millions more jobs go, and we're going to be moaning and groaning instead of standing up, fighting back, and winning.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.